We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ing. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, December 3rd, and I am sitting here with my almond croissant coffee, and this is kind of just a cup of amazingness. And I was telling Adam and Devin before the show that this is my new favorite coffee for the holidays, and they were making fun of me because it's called almond croissant, and they're like, is it soggy? You know, and I was describing it as flaky, which maybe not the best term for coffee. But then I went to the Nespresso website, which is where you can get this this amazing barista creation, because I have an espresso, and it's like, it was my greatest pandemic find, by the way. That is what kept me sane through 2020, was having an espresso in my house, and I love it, because I would always just go out and like buy coffee from, you know, from the Starbucks or whatever, and so I love Nespresso, and it describes it as, you know, notes of buttery tones and sweet vanilla, and, you know, just takes you off on this kind of lavish journey, reminiscent of the Arabian Dancer in the Nutcracker, which is very Christmas time oriented, because that was, you know, the land of sweets, and that was reminiscent of all of the coffee flavors. So, you know, just to get you kind of in the mood of all the coffee. With that, we will turn to something that isn't so pleasant, and this is going to be a sharp turn now, but we're going to be talking a lot about foreign policy, immigration, and all of that today, because it's not so merry and jolly for the holidays. But if you missed this story, this is so insane. The city of New York pays $220 million to rent the entire Roosevelt Hotel in Manhattan to house illegal migrants. So this is coming from an account on X, who is John Lefevre, I think is how he pronounces it. I'm probably butchering that. My apologies to John. But he's saying that the hotel is owned by the government of Pakistan, and the deal was part of a $1.1 billion IMF bailout package to help Pakistan avoid defaulting on their international debt. Prior to this sweetheart deal, the hotel had been closed since 2020, having long struggled with occupancy and in dire need of renovation. And he posts a screenshot, you know, from a story, but I'm not exactly sure where the screenshot came from. But, you know, this is on so many levels so sad. I mean, I remember staying in the Roosevelt Hotel on the days when I would go up to New York and, you know, be on Fox and some of those networks and everything, and stay there. And it was beautiful. And to now have the city of New York paying $220 million to rent this hotel to house illegal migrants right in the middle of downtown Manhattan, this is utterly absurd. And in expectation of Trump coming back into office, now maybe, just maybe, New York is their crazy leaders are having a little bit of a wake-up call. And so Governor Kathy Hochul is now actually saying that she will cooperate with the immigration system. And this is what she had to say just over the weekend. This is Cut 6.
Our immigration system is woefully broken. It's been broken for decades. There was an opportunity to make meaningful change that the Republicans in the House of Representatives killed, and they should be held accountable for that. But we need to fix the border, fix the system. But I'll tell you this. Those who come here legally, we want to get them jobs. I have 460,000 open jobs in the state of New York. I want them to get the proper work permits. I want them to keep their temporary protective status, if that's what they have. I want to make sure that they're part of contributing to society while they're here. That's separate from people who are criminals. Someone breaks the law, I'll be the first one to call up ICE and say, get them out of here. So there is a difference in categories of individuals. And so I just had a meeting this morning with my team that's been studying all the scenarios that could play out over the next few months and what we need to do to prepare. We'll be announcing more about that. And also making sure that our final requests to the Biden administration are secure. And so that's something else, again, I'll do a report on what we've achieved in the next couple of weeks.
You supportive or not supportive of deporting undocumented immigrants whose only crime is either crossing the border or overstaying?
If they're here with legal papers, like they came and they're seeking asylum, like this, the 224,000 people came to New York, they're here legally in search of asylum. And that process will play out. But there are other people who commit crimes or are known to be criminals before they arrived here. When those are identified, I'll be the first one to help get rid of them. I don't want them here. I don't want anybody terrorizing my citizens. So that's the difference.
That was New York Governor Kathy Hochul. And that clip was made ultimately so much better by my almond croissant coffee, I just have to say. But let's welcome in John Cardillo, who is a former NYPD officer and also a GOP strategist. So, John, overall, this was just a really sad story for New York. And I think Kathy Hochul is really just trying to walk the line between not offending the incoming Trump administration, but also not really promising much because, you know, they're using asylum as the loopholes like they always do.
Yeah, well, Jen, great to be with you. Happy belated Thanksgiving. And we've been friends a long time. I had no idea you were such a coffee aficionado.
Really?
Had no idea.
Wow.
So, you know,
that surprises me. You learn something new about me every day. Well, you know.
Every single day. So a lot to unpack, but if I had to take a guess, an educated guess, I think this is a tightrope walk by Kathy Hochul because, I don't know, my gut tells me that at some point in the recent past, could be days, could be weeks, Donald Trump may very well have had a conversation with Chuck Schumer and Kristen Gillibrand, especially Schumer, with whom he's got a almost 50-year relationship, 40-some-odd-year relationship. And it would be very plausible to think Trump said, hey, unless Hochul reins it in, unless Adams reins it in, I'm going to have a real hard time signing any bill that sends money to New York State. And because I'm not going to have federal funds go be diverted to pay for illegal aliens, it would be a perfectly appropriate thing for Trump or any president-elect to say. That would also send fear and panic down the spines of the representatives from New York. So I'm pretty confident something like that happened. Then Schumer, Gillibrand, whoever it may be, gets on the phone with Hochul and says, you got to do something about this. I mean, the Roosevelt Hotel situation is simply disgraceful. Like you said, you've stayed there. For your listeners that don't know, it's about a full city block. It was a classic old hotel in Midtown, had some beautiful old wood bars in it, things like that. It was a destination. Families would like stay there generationally on the holidays. But New York takes a big hit during COVID and crime spikes. And when crime spikes, commerce plummets, right? I mean, when you've got more crime, you've got less people visiting, et cetera. Plus business travelers were coming into New York for various reasons. COVID restrictions were a big part of it. But think about how sinister this is on the part of the globalists. So the International Monetary Fund puts $1.1 billion aid package together so that Pakistan won't default on debt and decides to use a quarter of that money, nearly a quarter of that money, 20% of that money to be exact, to fund a Pakistani-owned business in New York to house illegal aliens. So let's both protect Pakistan, one of the most egregious state enablers of terror, not as much a state sponsor as they are a state enabler, but everybody knows the Pakistani ISI works in concert with most of the worst terror groups on the planet. I had a former SEAL Team 6 member tell me a story where they were forced to work with the ISI. They were going to hit a base where they knew Al-Qaeda was. When they got there in the middle of the night, they were all gone. It was vacant. And they knew the ISI sold them out, but there was really nothing they could do because we needed some access to Pakistan. So it's not just egregious that they're housing illegal aliens, but that they're enriching a nation that harbored bin Laden for well over a decade and who consistently assists people who want to kill us. So in addition to helping the terrorists, they're now sending 200 and how many million illegal aliens to New York City. I would think arguably over a million have gotten there, but they're going to use that entire hotel, one city block, to house as many as they possibly can. If that doesn't tell you the globalists want to destroy the United States from all sides, I don't know what does.
Yeah, it's just shockingly tragic. And so when you have this many people that have come in and are already there, what practical steps can the Trump administration take to go into cities like this or cities like Denver, for example, whose mayor, is saying, we're going to be a sanctuary city, we're going to resist and all this, to actually round up these people and achieve the mass deportation that people like Tom Homan are saying that they want to accomplish relatively quickly, too?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, right? So I've long said on X, formerly Twitter and elsewhere, that deporting everybody here illegally is logistically impossible, right? We've got like 30 million illegals and state, local, and federal only about 750,000 law enforcement people. So they would do nothing all day, every day. They would never answer another 911 call. The DEA would never interdict another kilo of cocaine. They would do nothing but search for illegals. That's practically impossible. But in a city like New York, you can actually make a dent, right? Because you got a police department where I work, that's 40,000 plus strong with gun and shield carrying law enforcement officers. You've got very large contingent, very large field offices for all the federal agencies. So it's relatively easy in New York for ICE, Homeland Security Investigations, ICE, and the Marshal Service to bring on what they call PFOs, task force officers, from local law enforcement. That's very easy to do. They can request it. Trump and Congress would appropriate a couple of bucks to bring those TFOs over, but you could have a pretty robust fugitive apprehension team in a city like New York going and locking these people up. And one more point, Jenna, to Hochul's statement about, well, I want the hardworking ones, not the criminals. The countries they're coming from have no data infrastructure for the most part. We don't know who's a criminal and who's hardworking. So that hardworking dishwasher is only a hardworking dishwasher until he rapes a 12-year-old American kid. Now he's one of those criminals. We simply have no idea who's who. So Hochul's lie, her intentional lie to her constituents that we know the difference, that's pretty egregious.
Yeah, that's absolutely an excellent point. And it ultimately really shouldn't matter if someone is here illegally. They shouldn't be here, period. Whether whatever their status is on the moral scale, they are still here illegally. And obviously, the people who are already known violent criminals should be prioritized, if possible, to be deported. But but this is something about preserving our national sovereignty and making sure that we actually have borders as a nation. And this is something I think that was really important, probably the number one or number two issue that voters put into what is now being hailed, I think rightly so, as Trump's mandate, is to make sure that we don't allow the demographic of our country to change so much that we basically lose and dilute our vote and our national sovereignty. And we're almost out of time, John Cardillo, but last question for you. What coffee are you drinking this morning?
I'm very boring. I just do Dunkin' Donuts black with a few Splenda. That's been my thing for years. I am a very boring coffee guy.
Well, Devin really appreciates that because he's a Dunkin' guy. When he can be, he'll get Dunkin's, but that's great. And I would just tell you that if you want to up your game a little bit, the almond croissant coffee from Nespresso is absolutely amazing. But, take it from me. And I'm not, this isn't a paid sponsorship or anything. It's just because I love coffee and it's hilarious. But John, I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can actually get some of this accomplished. We can get border security, and we can make sure that, you know, for the first 100 days even, this has to be a priority from the Trump administration. And I'm hopeful that with people like, you know, Tom Homan, and, you know, we'll see how Kristi Noem does, but I'm hopeful that these kinds of things can actually start just completely reversing the utter disaster that has been the Biden-Harris administration. So, John, really appreciate it. You can follow John Cardillo on X, and we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning and my almond croissant coffee.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And I was told during the break that the Nespresso check has not cleared. So I should just refer to my amazing almond croissant coffee in the generic form that it is. So we'll continue with that. But it's in my cup that is a cozy sweater coffee mug that is just perfect for this actually really frigid day that it is here in Florida. All of the memes are hilarious, saying that, you know, Floridians are not used to this kind of cold, you know, 57 degree weather. And, you know, me being from Colorado, I'm sitting here kind of laughing and going like, yeah, I brought my UGG boots. Like, you know, you'll be fine, guys. Like, trust me, this is not the worst that could happen. But if you would like to see that, you're always welcome to follow the boys who are sitting here beside me on Instagram at The Adventures of Copper and Todd. They were very excited to see my coffee this morning. But let's turn again to the Middle East. And so who are the rebels that are battering Syria's regime, and do they pose a risk to Israel? This headline coming from the Times of Israel, in case you missed that story. There are rebels that have taken over Syria's second largest populated city in a continuation of a civil war that has gone on since 2011. And joining me now to discuss the impact not only on Israel, but what this portends for the United States is our good friend Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief for All Israel News at allisrael.com. So, Joel, this is, you know, an interesting escalation. What do you make of this in terms of the timing of this rebel occupation? And do we have Joel?
I'm here. Yes. Hi.
All right. All right. Good morning. And did you hear the question?
No, I did not. That's through now. Hi.
Oh, sorry about that. Good morning. Well,
morning.
We're talking. Yeah, good morning. And you missed my almond croissant coffee. I'm just saying, I'm letting everybody know it is the best thing in the world. I'm super happy about it. So if am I allowed to say where it's from, Devin, or am I? Yeah. No, anyway, it's from Nespresso, which we're not getting paid for, but I love it. And it's almond croissant coffee. And I'm just saying it's the greatest thing in the world. And I'm super happy about it. But the question was,
I'm happy for you, Jenna. That's good.
Thanks. I know. You know, you got to keep your spirits up, because we're talking about the ongoing civil war in Syria, the risk that this poses to Israel, the United States' potential involvement. So the headline from the Times of Israel is, who are the rebels battering Syria's regime, and do they pose a risk to Israel? So your thoughts on this ongoing, I mean, this has been a civil war that's been going on since 2011, but the timing of this particular escalation in the civil war.
Yeah, well, so I'm thinking many of your listeners are preferring to talk about Nespresso because they're thinking, you got to be kidding. I thought there was just a ceasefire over there, and now you're telling me there's a new civil war that's not new, it's 13 years old, exploding into Syria. Yes. So in the never a dull moment in the Middle East portion of the program, basically what you have is the anti-Bashar al-Assad rebels, Bashar al-Assad being the president, the cruel, wicked, evil president of Syria, who tried to kill his people in order to stay in power during the Arab Spring, when, you know, people like Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt, was letting himself be overthrown by the people to move on. Bashar al-Assad wouldn't. He started bombing his own people with chemical weapons. Well, the rebels eventually laid low because the Russians and the Iranians came to help Syria, to help Assad stay in power, because Russia and Syria are allies. Iran and Syria are allies, and Russia and Iran are allies. So they thought, no, we can't let our evil dictator friend, Bashar al-Assad, get overthrown. So they sent in forces, the Russians and the Iranians did, and they put down the rebellion. But the rebels have been sort of apparently preparing quietly for the moment when things would get quiet on other fronts so they could pop up and launch this surprise offensive and try to take over Aleppo, the biggest city in the north of Syria, and eventually they want to take over the whole country. Israel is watching with a lot of caution. We don't see a friend in there, somebody that we want to support. There is a report out, Jenna, and maybe you mentioned it before I came on, that Bashar al-Assad has actually quietly reached out to Israel and asked for us to help him. And Israel sent a message back saying, not, you've got to be kidding me. We'll send you a box of Nespresso because obviously you don't know what's going on. No,
just make sure it's almond croissant. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they sent it back to him a message saying, you would need to kick all of the Iranian forces out of your country before we'll even consider helping you. So we consider Assad a threat, but we consider the Russians and the Iranians in Syria an even larger threat than Assad. So it's a complicated, again, as you say, it's not new, but it's new for us at the moment because we've been dealing with so many other fronts that we're kind of watching with great caution what's going on in Syria, but it doesn't look good right now.
I'm speaking with Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of AllIsrael.com and All Israel News. And, you know, so this also is a complicated situation for the United States because the HTS, which the United States has designated a terrorist organization now, and then also with Israel's posture and being an ally to the United States, where does this put the United States in the waning days of the Biden administration, but especially with, you know, Donald Trump looking at this and, you know, I think chomping at the bit to be ready to helm the United States presidential administration and foreign policy as soon as he gets into office?
Yes, that's a good question, Jenna. And I my first instinct is to say that there's not a clear American move in Syria, just like there's not a clear Israeli move. Generally, when your enemy is imploding or your enemies have turned on each other, you basically stay out and let them fight it out. Basically, Russia, Turkey, Syria, and Iran are sort of turning on each other right now. Some are helping one side help, but they're jockeying for position to control Syria. I don't see an American move there. If there was ever an American first moment where you say, don't get involved in Syria right now, maybe, you know, because I can't see who the ally is. The goal is to protect Israel. The goal is to make sure that the problems in Syria don't spill over. But I would say that the biggest move that Trump has made in the last 24 hours is to tell the people, the Hamas terrorists in Gaza, that there's going to be hell to pay if they don't release these American hostages, much less all the rest of the hostages, by January 20th. And I think that's just a wonderful moment of Donald Trump clarity. Now, I don't know exactly how he intends to actualize on his threat, but the threat is the exact right thing to do. In other words, we have Americans being held for 400 and almost 30 days in Gaza. Don't focus on Syria and intervention in Syria right now. That's what a Biden administration would do. Focus first on getting Americans and our allies out of hostage captivity in Gaza and start to assert American force and leadership and determination. And I think that's good. You're seeing a lot of wicked regimes around the region tremble at the idea that Donald Trump is coming back, and they should. And this was a great move by the president yesterday. And again, stay focused on what you can focus on. Don't get involved in Syria unless there was some specific way that American interests would be advanced. And that's just not clear right now.
Yeah, and that was going to be actually my next question for you, Joel Rosenberg, is, you know, what clearly would be America's interest in getting involved in this stage? And I don't think that that really is all that clear. And especially when we're looking at, you know, the posture between all of the ongoing conflicts, is there, and there has been some at least speculation that, you know, in part, one of the reasons for the escalation and this particular move by the rebels in Syria is because of the ongoing Ukraine and Russia conflict. I mean, all of these things kind of interplay, and that's become, at least for the Biden administration, even the leftists are admitting that that the Ukraine conflict is basically a proxy war for the United States. And so how does that engagement there, for lack of a better term, play into all of this and the question of, you know, is there really an interest for the United States that's articulable at the moment?
There's not an interest in American interest that you can find.
And we're kind of, Joel is kind of breaking up a little bit. Let's see if
okay.
we can get,
all right, sorry.
Oh, and you're back. You're right. Back. Go ahead.
Okay. So the American interest in Syria is to keep the mess in Syria from causing new harm to our allies, Israel, but also Jordan, okay, that which is an important Arab moderate ally of the United States. So you want to protect Jordan, you want to protect Israel, but you don't want to get involved in the mess that is Syria. Now in Ukraine, see, you know, that's where, you know, disagreed with some of my conservative friends and colleagues, where I see that the interest is not primarily saving Ukraine per se, though my instinct is when Russia is raping and pillaging a country, you should help people not be raped and pillaged by Russia. I mean, I think Vladimir Putin is such a wicked person, and he's invaded so many countries. He's invaded Syria. He's invaded the country of Georgia. He invaded southern Ukraine years ago, Crimea, eastern Donbass, and then he invaded the whole country. Like, this guy is a very dangerous threat. Are the communist Chinese a threat? Yes. And people say, oh, the communist Chinese are the biggest threat. Well, they're a very big threat, but they're not invading any countries yet. Vladimir Putin is. So I believe the American interest in Ukraine is not Ukraine per se. It's stopping Vladimir Putin from winning. And I think that doesn't mean sending boots on the ground. I think it does mean sending weapons to Ukraine, because I don't think we dare not let Vladimir Putin, the evil mafia dictator of Russia, have any successes when it comes to invading countries in Europe, because eventually it could spill over into a NATO country, and then we have to send forces. So I think that Biden has just given Ukraine enough help to not let them exactly lose, but he never was willing to help them win. And I think that's a mistake. And I know that some of my conservative colleagues don't agree with me, but that's my position on it, because I think Putin is a long-term serious threat to the United States and our allies.
Yeah, well, and this is why we can have these conversations and need to have them on, you know, on all sides and discuss the policy and the United States involvement. And I'm speaking with Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News. You can find that at allisrael.com. And in the last few minutes we have with you, Joel, I also wanted to ask you about this agreement. So one of your headlines right now is Hamas and Fatah reach agreement on day after in Gaza. And so, you know, there's still a lot of ongoing news in terms of the conflict between Israel and Gaza. Where is this situated right now? What's the latest?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought it up. So Hamas is nearly entirely destroyed and defeated in Gaza. This is a good thing. But there are still, we would call them Hamasniks. There's still Hamas terrorists who, you know, they don't wear uniforms, so they blend into the civilian population for a while. Then they uncover some, you know, a cache of secret weapons, and then they come out and they try to, you know, kill Israelis.
and capture humanitarian relief aid. You know, so we've got to keep working there. We've got to keep fighting there. We've got to keep rooting out Hamas. Now, Fatah is the moderate political faction of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And the short version is, it's not yet clear, Jenna, I'll just be candid with you, whether this is essentially a Hamas surrender agreement. In other words, if it may become clear that Hamas is essentially surrendering to Fatah. Fatah is a corrupt Palestinian entity, but it's moderate. It's not, you know, it's not going to come and attack Israel. And so they're problematic. Don't get me wrong. The Palestinian Authority is not exactly a trustworthy organization, but they're better than Hamas. So if Fatah has essentially gotten Hamas to surrender by saying, okay, we'll work together, but really Fatah will be in charge of humanitarian relief and so forth in Gaza, that could be the beginning of something positive. However, if what this really is Fatah propping up Hamas and saying, let's work together and breathe new life into Hamas, then Fatah has made a very serious mistake, and no one will agree to it. So I think it's too early to say, and we're going to have to give it some time.
Yeah, this is all going to be very fascinating to continue to watch, and especially as we have, you know, just another about, you know, a little over a month of the Biden administration. And then, of course, you know, everybody in the Middle East knows that Trump is on his way. He is well prepared to take over. And hopefully that is informing some of these decisions. But Joel Rosenberg, always appreciate your insights and your commentary. And you can read all of the news at allisrael.com from Joel Rosenberg. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are still continuing to talk about the conflicts in the Middle East. And meanwhile, just yesterday, Joe Biden, yeah, remember him? He's still the president for a little bit, you know, in case you hadn't realized that. But apparently all the taxpayer funding is just going to Kamala's vacation after her devastating defeat by Donald Trump, which is kind of hilarious. And I'm like, you know what? Just go lay on the beach, lady, and don't even do anything for the rest of your term. But Joe Biden is still making some important decisions, or at least the people around him. And this is coming from Axios. Biden steps up Ukraine military aid surge with a new $725 million package. So the Biden administration announced this new security assistance package for Ukraine on Monday that includes a provision for more landmines and precision rocket launchers. And according to Axios, why it matters is that Biden has committed to a surge in aid for Ukraine before he leaves office, with President-elect Trump having publicly criticized more military aid to the nation. So joining me now is our good friend Steve Dace, who is host of the Steve Dace Show on The Blaze. And Steve, you know, where does this position Donald Trump as he is, I think, as I mentioned to Jill Rosenberg earlier, I think he's kind of chomping at the bit to, you know, get back into power so that he can deal with some of these things.
Well, I think it's fascinating when you look at the Ukraine war in particular. No one can make a satisfactory case for the United States' interest in this whatsoever. This has been 3 years now, and the case we keep hearing over and over again is some nebulous charge that Putin will rebuild the Soviet Union. So now we have, you know, we're making the domino theory arguments like it's 1981 or 1965. Vladimir Putin tried to do an Olympics about 15 years ago, and they had to paper mache toilets in the hotels for the media. He's been unable to subdue Ukraine in 3 years, and yet he's on the brink of recreating the Soviet Union. I just don't even know what our vested interest is there. No one will tell me. No one can make the case to me, frankly, that my life is different or better as an American if Vladimir Putin controls the Crimea, or George Soros, that's his playground over there, Ukraine. He's one of its biggest benefactors. So why do I care if George Soros and the World Economic Forum, you know, if Davos controls Ukraine or Moscow does? Do you know why? Can you answer this question for me? I've asked a lot of very smart people this question the last few years. Jenna, I've not gotten a satisfactory answer once. Why do I care?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the only reason that we care is to make sure that the U.S. interests or non-interests are actually preserved, which means that we, at least in my opinion, we shouldn't be sending a lot more of all of this funding to Ukraine, especially when we need the money to secure our own borders. And this is the whole idea of America First is, you know, take care of your own house before you go and fight some of these proxy wars. And yet it's absolutely absurd. And my personal theory and my personal opinion is that there was some kind of, you know, backroom deal struck between Biden and Zelensky. Maybe it's a payoff for the first impeachment. I mean, who knows? But, you know, it makes absolutely no sense why for the last, as you mentioned, 3 years, all of this is going on and nobody has been able to articulate what exactly is the United States' interest over here.
Mitch McConnell, this is the most important issue in America today. Okay, so, all right. Where are all the embedded reporters? You ever seen a war go on that was this important? Where's all the file footage? I mean, where's the war footage? Where are all the Pulitzers at for covering this momentous and historic conflict? But this whole thing is another COVID. And most of this is just crisis acting. And I don't trust any of these people on anything anymore. I don't. I think the best case scenario is this is some Habsburg dynasty redux and a bunch of wannabe megalomaniacs from Moscow to Davos to Washington, D.C., want to turn that country into its, you know, uranium and mineral enrichment playground for its own schemes. And we're just being asked essentially to fund this and pick, hey, which wing of the Habsburgs do you want to die at the Marne for? Okay, Prussia's or the Anglo-French ones? World War One was literally a war for nothing. Literally a war for nothing. And all it did was set the stage for an existential war for everything in World War II that killed a lot more people. Nothing in America would have changed if either the Kaiser or the French had won World War I. Nothing would have really changed. Just two wings of the exact same family killing a whole bunch of people for nothing. And that's essentially what I view this as. This is a war for nothing other than the interest of some elites who hate me. I don't think Vladimir Putin's a good person. I think probably if North Korea is sending troops to your aid, you're probably not a good person. Good rule of thumb. Amen. On the other hand, here's what Vladimir Putin didn't do that Davos, Soros, and the elites in my country did do the last 3 years. Kill over 10,000 small businesses. Tell me I had to stay in my home. Try to choke me out with a mask. tell my kids they couldn't go anywhere, arrest me if I tried, shut my churches down, tried to force me to take a poison that they manufactured from the same poison that they manufactured the virus from. Vladimir Putin didn't do that to me. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't care. So this is just these Middle Eastern conflicts with white people. I don't care. I'm a Christian. I don't see myself as part of an ethnicity or a race. Those race isn't a biblical construct to begin with. So to me, I mean, the biblical worldview aligns people via beliefs and not via external, divisions. So I don't care which Islamic sect controls which country. We got more than enough oil on our own. Let's just drill it and screw those people. I don't care. Nor do I care which white group of white elites who think that they are going to they're the next Peter the Great, or they're here to usher in the utopia from their Ivy League schemes. I don't care which one gets their rocks off in Ukraine. I don't care. And I'm at the point, frankly, that unless there's like a Red Dawn scenario where an enemy is literally dropping troops in our yards, I'm really not in favor of deploying our military basically anywhere. I don't trust any of these people at all, Jenna. I just don't trust them at all.
And I totally agree with that. And speaking of not trusting anybody on anything, I want to get your take as well on the Hunter Biden pardon, because, you know, for over a year, we were told, and the press secretary continued to reiterate and insist, that Joe Biden was not going to pardon his son, Hunter, and no, you know, nobody is above the law, and, you know, we'll let the justice system work it out. We have full faith in all of that. And it was all complete BS. I mean, it was a total lie. And, and now this whole narrative that, you know, oh, over Thanksgiving, you know, Biden had a change of heart as he was sitting around the hearth, probably, you know, drinking coffee or whatever. You know, his version, he doesn't have as good as almond croissant and espresso, I'm just saying. But, you know, as he was sitting there with his family, and, you know, and then suddenly he comes to this great realization. Oh, yes. Okay, Hunter. Now, yeah, sure. I'll go back on my word while releasing this statement that says, you know, I've been a man of my word this whole time, that I won't interfere, as he's interfering. I mean, this is just, it's preposterous, and the American people should be outraged about it. And yet I've heard some conservatives go, well, you know, I mean, it's the power of pardon, so, you know, whatever, let's move on. But this shows, I think, a deep-seated problem with the entire left, which is, as you said, Steve, I don't trust them.
Yeah, the social compact, I know I say this every time I'm on your show, because to me, this is the fundamental observation of the era in which we live. The social compact is broken. Right now, I'm America first and not America only. I do think we have a responsibility, given how God has blessed our nation, to be a blessing to other nations. I do. I think to whom much is given, much is required. So, but the issue to me is, see, these two issues that we just discussed are interrelated, because it's the exact same people and worldview that are at the behest of both. I don't have anything in, I should care that Vladimir Putin and North Korea are working together to take over the Crimea. I should, except the people that you're talking about here in your second question broke Western civilization and want to break it. They want to smash the stained glass windows. They want to do it. They want to trash and shred our founding documents. They're actively doing so. They want to lie. They want to punish us. They want to do those things. So therefore, I don't have any shared interests with them. And when I look at them, I think, boy, let me see. I can determine whether you go to church. I can just pardon whomever I want after lying to you, and do so in a way that probably just exonerates myself more than anything else. I can mandate what you injected. That seems very Putin-like to me. I mean, I don't see the only difference between Joe Biden and really most Democrats and Vladimir Putin is your audience and mine own 300 million guns. And they have, and so therefore they at least have to pretend to still care about some vestige of our founding traditions. That's it. And so therefore, no, I don't feel like there's, unless we're under a direct attack from a mutual enemy, literally in our yards, I don't have anything in common with you. I don't want to fight alongside you. I don't have shared interests with you. You've made it very clear you have no shared interest with me. And I, therefore, you broke that social compact. We're not in any form of a covenantal relationship here. And so, no, I don't care. And what I think ought to happen here is I think that this ought to, Trump, day one, everybody, and I mean everybody, because here's the thing, it's been also 3 years since January 6th. Whatever happened to the famed pipe bomber? Whatever happened to, why weren't the National Guard called out the day before? Who knows who Ray Epps is? No, I don't trust him on anything. We're letting everybody out, pardoning absolutely everybody. Every J6er in a jail cell right now, anyone who's been committed of anything, instant pardon, instant. I think we ought to test whether there are preemptive pardons. Trump ought to just preemptively pardon himself, all his donors, anybody who's ever taken a picture with him at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, you know this better than me. You're Trump adjacent, plan on lawfare as soon as he gets out of office. Plan on it. He ought to just preemptively pardon all those people. We're in a cold civil war. And, well, Steve, I don't think you can preemptively pardon. Well, yes, we can fight that out in the courts, because in that process, they would also then have to explain why this lawfare is even justified to begin with. I think we ought to go after the law licenses of all these prosecutors. I think Republican states' attorney generals should be doing that. I think that we have to accept this is where we are. And the Hunter Biden pardon is the final nail in the coffin. They literally, at the whole time, Jenna, they were accusing Trump of being compromised by Russian hookers with lascivious acts on tape. Hunter Biden was literally cataloging himself blackmail material while he was smoking crack and doing lascivious acts with Russian hookers. You cannot make this up. You cannot make it up. Okay. And this, so this is where we are. And I don't think there's anywhere back other than accepting it. And now we need to, Trump and his team need to do to this Soviet mindset in our country what Reagan did to the Soviet mindset in other countries. Break it. It has to be broken. We cannot share a country with it. We cannot share a culture with it. It's made it very clear it will not share with us. And so these views are as irreconcilable as the Western view and the Soviet view were for 50 years. One of these worldviews is going to emerge out of this era, and the other one will not. I like it better if ours does. It has to be broken.
And I agree with you that it absolutely has to be broken, and the lie that people still believe. Because, you know, when Joe Biden was running in 2020 and when he first, you know, came into the White House, it was supposed to be, oh, he's bringing decency back. He's going to be the one that has the fidelity to the norms of society, the standards and the processes. You know, he's going to be the one that's going to bring back, you know, kind of this balance to the force, if you will, you know, to use the Star Wars analogy. And all of that was a lie. All of that was a total lie. And meanwhile, there are still conservatives that are like, oh, Trump, don't, you know, use your constitutionally delegated power to put in recess appointments so that your own party, the Republicans, can't undermine the first 2 years of your presidency like they did last time. And I'm thinking, of course, use the process. I mean, when it's a moral decision, obviously, that's where, you know, you draw the line. But process, if you're just saying this is a better chess move and I'm going to outmaneuver you by the process, absolutely use it. Why are we saying, oh, well, Trump has to abide by the spirit of the law, but the Democrats can just, you know, completely light a fire to the Constitution and nobody cares? I mean, this is absolutely where we're at right now, Steve. And so can this be broken? Do you think that can happen over the course of 4 years?
Yes. You have to do it the same way Reagan broke the Soviet Union, mutual assured destruction. They have to be shown. If you go to these places, we will go there with yours. And right now, that has not been the case. They get to do practically whatever they want, unless John Roberts decides the Supreme Court can step in, or the governor of Florida steps in. One of those two things, the Supreme Court or the governor of Florida doesn't step in, they get to do, frankly, whatever they want. Or maybe whoever's the attorney general at Missouri. I'll give you that one, too. So those three places. So short of whoever the attorney general of Missouri is, the Supreme Court, or the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, they do whatever they want. That has to stop. There must be punishment for this. There must be, people must be held accountable. There must be justice.
Without mutual assured destruction, we will have as much tyranny as we are willing to comply with. And let me say this, too. I know we're short on time here. With what you just said, I want to make sure your audience hears me say this to you.
And we are out of time, so we'll ask Steve to tweet it.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.